How would the big banks handle another crisis? From APM in Washington, I'm David Gura, in for David Brancaccio. Later today, the Federal Reserve will release results of the latest round of stress tests the Fed has performed on 31 of the world's biggest banks. These are required by law. They're part of the Dodd-Frank Act Congress passed after the financial crisis. And here with more on how they work and what the consequences are for banks if they fail these tests is Patty Hirsch, our resident explainer. Hi, Patty.
Hello, David.
So we think of a stress test as something you get if, say, you're worried about heart disease. Extrapolate this for me. What does it mean in banking?
Well, it doesn't mean that everyone's doing push-ups and running like half miles under time, unfortunately, because that would be fun. No, essentially what they're going to do is they're going to put like a bunch of numbers together that show GDP falling as much as 6.1%, a 60% dive in the stock market, a huge spike in oil prices, and a jump in European bond yields. And they want to see how banks would react under those kinds of circumstances. For the most part, the American banks are expected to pass these tests. Citigroup is one that people are watching as a possible failure. But these European banks are looking very risky. Certainly Deutsche Bank and Banco Santander are the ones that people are looking at most closely. And they're saying that, you know, quantitatively, they'll probably be all right. They've probably got enough money in the bank. But in terms of their risk management, that's where those guys are going to have a little bit of a problem.
To what extent is this something that changes year after year? I mean, it's been a few years now since these rules have been put into place. Why don't these banks sort of figure out what they need to do and keep it that way? How much are they susceptible to sort of externalities, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Well, I mean, you know, the banks have been very proactive about this. In fact, you know, if you look at them, J.P. Morgan's a great example. J.P. Morgan's really been slashing hard at its businesses to make sure that it stays within the bounds laid out by the Federal Reserve. And you know, that has really affected its operations. I mean, they've started to close branches. That means they're laying people off. They really are putting the squeeze on themselves to make sure that they stay in the box.
What happens if a bank fails this test? I know that Citi has failed it a couple times now. What are the consequences?
Well, the consequences aren't enormous initially. Essentially, the failures just restrict their bank's ability to increase dividends and buybacks. But of course, if you fail serially, then, you know, regulators are going to take an increased interest in you. Shareholders obviously aren't going to like the fact that they're going to be able to have money returned to them. There's kind of a death of a thousand paper cuts, really, which is appropriately bureaucratic. It would be a slow squeeze on a bank that failed these tests again and again over time.
Patty Hirsch, our resident explainer. Patty, thanks very much as always.
That's my pleasure, David. Thank you.
At the beginning of the financial crisis, the Bank of England held a series of auctions designed to encourage lending, and now there are allegations they were rigged. This morning we learned there's a fraud investigation into how the UK's central bank and traders may have behaved. The BBC's Jonathan Frewin joins us now. Hi, Jonathan.
Good morning, David.
So there is this inquiry by the Serious Fraud Office, it's called. What are they looking into?
Well, the investigation is into whether there was some sort of malfeasance in the way that these auctions to get liquidity, money into the system back at the height of the credit crunch in 2007 and 2008, into the way that that money was making it into the system. Last year, the Bank of England commissioned an independent inquiry into whether staff at the bank knew or assisted in possible manipulation of auctions that it held. That independent investigation then was referred to the Serious Fraud Office, and that's how this has come about.
So these are early days. It sounds like there's a lot that we don't know. What could they be investigating here?
The possibility is that when the loans were made back in 2007 and 8, when people were concerned about whether they were going to be able to get money out of the cash point the next day, the emergency funds that were set up and pumped into the system required banks to stump up some collateral in the form of mortgages that they held. But it appears the banks may have been saying, these loans that we're giving you as collateral are actually worth more than they are. And the question is whether the Bank of England officials were turning a blind eye to that, whether they were made aware of it, or there may have been some malpractice at the heart of it, which was that bankers were trying to manipulate the markets in the height of the financial crisis to make more profits.
The BBC's Jonathan Frewin in London. Jonathan, thanks.
You're very welcome.
And let's do the numbers. The 100-share index in London is up 0.4% at 6,947, and the CAC 40 in Paris is also up 0.9% at 4,962. Later this morning, the Bureau of Labor Statistics will release revised productivity and costs data for the fourth quarter of last year, the last few months of 2014. What can we learn from those numbers? Tim Fitzsimmons explains.
We've tracked labor productivity in the U.S. for about 70 years. For most of that time, it's risen steadily along with economic growth. Recessions just saw little blips. That is, until the last one.
This recession was particularly severe.
That's Catherine Shaw. She's a professor at Stanford's business school. She says the Great Recession seems to have instilled fear in workers.
People seem to be responding to the threat of unemployment by increasing their effort.
Productivity nationwide rose sharply, and in areas with high unemployment, it shot up even more. During the recovery, those numbers dipped. But booms and busts in the economy aren't the only factor when it comes to how hard we work. For years, growing rates of education have helped workers become more productive. But that's leveling off, says Dale Jorgensen, an economics professor at Harvard.
The people who are now retiring are the last generation of people with lower educational qualifications. So we're not going to get the kind of boost from improved labor quality due to education that we've had in the past.
Jorgensen says it takes decades of data to figure out what normal is. So bottom line, it's best to not get too caught up in those quarterly reports. In Washington, I'm Tim Fitzsimmons for Marketplace.
Finally, the company Etsy has filed the requisite paperwork to go public. It wants the ticker symbol ETSY, by the way. Etsy was founded almost a decade ago as a marketplace for craftsmen and craftswomen to sell their wares, and since then, the site has grown considerably. Last year, it did almost $200 million in sales. Some of Etsy's members say they're not thrilled about the IPO, saying it goes against the spirit of the site. Its CEO says he intends to, quote, keep Etsy's unconventional operating philosophy. I'm David Gura with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.